after that, at 10 o'clock in the next morning, did you just go to bed?
No, no.
What happened?
Well, you know, all night long we wore a mask, and you had to keep putting stuff on it so you wouldn't get ill. And when we got through, we just went to our tent and just sat on the bunks.
Did anybody come in to talk to you about it?
Mm-mm, no.
No. Well, since you were all volunteers, you weren't a unit.
No.
So there was nobody in charge of the volunteers.
Well, we were a unit, but none of the officers was in there. It was just us that volunteered to do that job.
When you read the book, We Were Soldiers, or even watch the movie, they talk about how ill-prepared mm-hmm. the military was and mm-hmm. the communication to the families and things like that. They were even, sounds to me like they weren't prepared mm-hmm. for the casualties.
When they went in, I think it was the 1st and the 5th Regiment or Battalion and the 1st and the 7th. When they went into X-ray, they didn't have any idea of how many enemy was even there. There had been no recon or anything like that. So they had a big mountain there called Chupong Massif, and it went from Vietnam over into Cambodia. And these people would come down the Ho Chi Minh Trail, they called it, and they just crossed over into Vietnam whenever they got ready. Mm-hmm. But they were between 2,500 and 3,100 the enemy killed. I think it was about 4,000 on that mountain, and they had no idea. And I think when they went into X-ray, there was about 400.
400?
Yeah.
Enemy or 400 soldiers? American soldiers?
Yeah, American soldiers. But they didn't have any idea how many enemy was there.
Well, that's where Freddie Owens said that he lost 200-something of his friends that day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I want to go back to this 19 or 20-year-old man. Did they call you JL back then?
Yeah, my friends did.
What was your rank?
I was PFC, private first class.
Were they all PFCs in there?
No, they were some E4s and E5s.
Did any of them take charge?
No, we just each did what we had to do.
And when you were done working at 10 o'clock, did you all go back to separate tents, or did y'all go to one tent?
No, we didn't. We went back to our bunks. But we didn't go to sleep. There was no sleep. And for days, it was just, you know, a nap here and a nap there. You couldn't sleep.
So nobody talked to you about what had happened?
No.
Then were there more helicopters coming in the next day? Or
no, that was all I remember was those, yeah. But I'm sure that some of the helicopters probably went somewhere else, because a total kill was 305 Americans and 250 wounded, and one Air Force pilot killed. And the enemy, that was among all the landing zones.
That was the one that got shot down in the movie, I guess. I don't know, maybe not. There was one that got shot down in the movie, a helicopter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, they several got shot down.
Oh, okay.
And Bruce Crandall and Ed Freeman, they helped fly the force in. They could only go in 60 at the time.
60 what?
Men. And okay. Then they'd have to go back and get 60 more.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
And they constantly went in under withering fire.
Now, when you say 60 at a time, was that four helicopters, three helicopters?
Four or five?
Mm-hmm.
And then they'd have to go back and get more until they got the whole 400 or so, I think.
Do you think those soldiers knew what they were flying into?
No. Even Colonel Moore, at the time, he was a lieutenant general when he retired, they didn't know that. He asked before they went, but they didn't have any idea how many was there.
And they were hoping to get them all in before they started.
Yeah.
How many were they hoping to have in?
About 400.
About 400, mm-hmm. But first they had 60, mm-hmm. and then 60 more came in, which meant they had 85 or 90.
Yeah.
And then 60 more came in, and they didn't have 180 when the third thing came in. They probably had 120.
They just kept bringing them in. One of the platoons, they call it the Lost Platoon, it got separated.
I remember that, yeah.
And they lost most of their men. They got a few of them out.
Mm-hmm. You weren't hungry when you went back.
No.
And you had no coaching.
No.
No contact. You were isolated from the other 10 men.
Well, there was one or two in my tent. But
did you all get together and talk about what you had been doing?
No, we never did.
Nobody asked?
Mm-hmm. Nobody ever asked.
When did it dawn on you? And when did it start affecting you later in life?
Well, when I came home, it was a few years before it affected me. Of course, I was young and out partying and drinking, and it didn't really affect me. Well, you didn't talk about it back then. I think around 90, it really, I started having real problems.
That's 25 years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it had been sneaking up on me all the time. I just didn't know it.
What was sneaking up on you?
The PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder.
Well, it wasn't guilt. You didn't do anything wrong.
No, we didn't do anything
wrong.
Was it
rage? Was it? If you had to identify what it was that was affecting your behavior.
Yeah. Well, yeah, rage, anger, anxiety, depression, sadness.
Did you know who to have those feelings for?
No.
Did you know who to direct it at?
No. Just sad over what had happened, what had took place.
Just sad?
Yeah. And stayed anxious and depressed all the time.
So what, 25 years later?
Yeah.
What did you do?
Well, I started getting lost, started crying a lot. Started crying a lot and didn't know why. Get lost out on the highway, tears just rolling down my cheeks. So I was telling my doctor about it, and he said, "You sound like you're depressed, so I'm going to send you down to the mental health center to be evaluated." And I saw a therapist down there, and she, after I seen her for 10 weeks, she said, "Mr. Tucker said you've got post-traumatic stress disorder due to your service in Vietnam because you've answered all these questions." So I started seeing the psychiatrist, but she never done me any good. She never really talked to me.
Well, now back then, they weren't trained.
No.
I mean, PTSD was just something that was starting to,
mm-hmm.
although it had gone all the way back to World War II to shell shock, all the way back mm-hmm. to World War I is shell shock, and the Civil War, it was called Soldier's Heart, and it goes all the way back to Achilles in the Greek wars.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at the things in the book, the things that Achilles said, he had post-traumatic stress disorder, but mm-hmm. he let his rage out in being a great warrior, and he would release it by killing the enemy.
Yeah.
You didn't have anybody to kill, did you?
Uh-uh. No, I didn't have anybody to kill.
Didn't have anybody to blame.
Uh-uh.
And they said you had depression?
Yeah, anxiety, panic attacks, sadness, loneliness.
Isolation.
Isolation. Started drinking real bad, and I guess to cover it up.
And originally you would have nobody to go see about that?
Uh-uh.
Did you ever blame yourself?
No, I never blamed myself. A few years later, I was my youngest daughter encouraged me to go over to the clinic, the VA clinic, and seek help. So I went over there, and I was assigned a psychologist, Dr. Richardson.
Okay. And we're going to talk about that in the next segment. But that's an amazing story, J.L. Yeah, thank you for going through that for all of us.
Yeah.
And what a story you have, sir. You volunteered to step into something that you've carried, well, what is that, 45 years, 50 years?
49 years in November.
49 years.
Mm-hmm.
And all you did was raise your hand and said, I'll help you with mm-hmm. that.
Yes.
If you folks are just tuning in, J.L. Tucker wound up volunteering for a mission. He didn't know what it was, but it wound up being unloading the bodies from the Battle of Idrang.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Had to process them and identify them mm-hmm. and those kind of things, and had no coaching or counseling after that. You just reported back to duty and mm-hmm. went back to work and brought all those memories home with you.
Yeah.
And those memories changed your life, didn't they?
Yeah, forever.
Tell me how.
Well, after I went through all the years of anger and drinking, I drank for a long time, and being sad and depressed, and I wound up going to see Dr. Richardson at the VA clinic. He's a wonderful Christian man.
But this time out, let me ask you one question. Were you married while you were in Vietnam?
No.
So you married when you came home?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
About 3 years after I came home, yeah. And talked to Richardson, talked to me for 1 hour. And he said, "You know, J.L., I'm not going to put you on medicine. I don't think you need that." But he said, "I know what you do need. And it's a group of men called Legacy Peer Support Group. And it's all Then it was all Vietnam veterans. He urged me to go see them and meet them, and still it was 6 months before I went. But, you know, when I walked in that room, I just felt the love and that they had for one another. Immediately I felt love, and I just fell in love with that group.
And that group, Legacy Peer Support Group.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a group dedicated to?
Talking about your problems, getting it out in the open, helping each other.
And they're all Vietnam veterans?
Well, I think we got one or two Iraqi veterans now.
Okay. So it's starting to grow, starting to build.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's went from one group to two groups. And then they got one in Sevier County, one in Blount County. Is that right, Howard?
What is your role in that group now?
Well, there's three parts to that. There's a Legacy Peer Support Group and Vet to Vet Tennessee, which I was honored to ask to become the vice president of. And I accepted. And then the other part is the Knoxville Veterans Mental Health Council. I'm not sure what my role is there.
Uh-huh. And that's a group that I've had the pleasure of being a part of.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you take your experience in Vietnam and apply it to what you're doing today? Or do you?
No. Well, I don't know how to answer that. Okay, yeah. I take what I've learned and I apply it to helping others.
And how do you do that?
Well, like right now, we've got a bicycle drive going to give to our veterans that's off the street, homeless, or maybe live in a halfway house, so that they get into the Veterans Treatment Court if they qualify. So we're very involved in collecting bicycles, so they'll have a way to go look for a job. So we found out that they was walking 1 to 2 miles a day just to put in a job interview, and that was just intolerable.
Mm-hmm.
So Ed and the rest of the Vet Tennessee and Legacy decided to start collecting bicycles. So I've been heavily involved in that. And now I think they're collecting clothes also, good used clothing. See, some of these vets have got their families
right
with them. So we get, you know, with bicycles all sizes, don't make no difference what.
Well, do these veterans know who you are? I mean, do they know your story?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, not the ones off the streets don't, but the ones in Legacy do.
Do you know their stories?
No. No, I do the ones in Legacy, but not the ones off the street. Now, Howard, he's a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't you, Howard?
Yes.
He knows more about that.
In the Veterans Court?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so you guys, for the past couple of weeks that we've had interviews, and for 6 weeks before that, we were talking about the veteran-friendly congregations, mm-hmm. and the veterans' courts, and you guys are part of the push behind that.
Uh-huh.
Your role in particular, what is your role?
Well, my role is just to get out and do whatever, you know, needs to be done, like the bicycles and the clothing. Of course, we have a business meeting every week before the group meeting starts, and I listen to Ed and Freddie a lot there. They do most of the talking. But I just do whatever, like I did in Vietnam. I just do what's asked of me.
Okay. And where do you think this is going to go? Where do you want it to go?
Well, I'm a lot better than I was when I joined that group. But I'm like Howard. I don't want to be 100% cured, because I don't want to leave this group, because we're reaching out to these veterans that don't know anything about PTSD, and they need to know. And they're learning that through us.
And if someone called you, and I understand from last week, somebody called you, mm-hmm. almost right after the show was over.
Yeah.
And I know we don't want to talk about them, their names or anything, but what was the gist?
Well, she called very concerned about her son. He had been a heavy drinker for years. He was totally disabled and drawing benefits, I guess, from the VA. But he had started drinking whiskey, and she was really concerned about his health. He'd had 4 heart attacks. Lost all his teeth. I'm just in sad shape. And she asked me what she needed to do about it. And I said, well, you need to encourage him to see a psychologist. I said, he's in VA medical care? And she said, yeah. I said, he needs to see a psychologist too. She said, well, what will that cost him? I said, it won't cost him anything. So anyway, I give her our website. And she was going to give it to her daughter, because she didn't want to make her son mad at her. Mm-hmm. And she was going to check the website out.
His problem was not a problem that unique to him. In several of my interviews, even with the World War II veterans, they talked about the drinking problems they had when they came home. I had one even say that after he went and talked to a minister, his drinking left him. And I looked at him and said, "Your drinking left you?" "Yes, sir, my drinking left me." So you can also go to tnvhc.org on the internet. J.O., wrap us up here.
Well, I'd like to take this time to say a few words about my youngest daughter, Christy Pond, who's got into this bicycle drive. She's done an excellent job. She's working very hard at it. She's took it to heart to help get bicycles for these veterans. And the Legacy loves her and appreciates what she's doing, and so do I. She's a great young lady.
J.O., we want to thank you for coming today.
Thank you, Randy.